This coming Wednesday, the U.S. House will hold its first hearing on gun violence prevention since 2011. And that fits with a recently published study about how children and teens are dying in this country. According to a University of Michigan injury prevention study, about 8 children or teens die every day because of firearms. Dr. Rebecca Cunningham is a professor of emergency medicine. She directs the U of M Injury Prevention Center. Dr. Cunningham, good to have you on Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
So this study, if I'm right, now marks the very first time that all causes of child and teen death have been broken down by both mechanism and intent, and then rates the causes of death, the rates have been figured out. So where did all the data come from?
So the data is publicly available data from the CDC that has been around for actually quite some time. And our group sort of looked through that mountain of data and looked at it a little bit more in a unique way than has been looked at certainly in recent years and widely broadcast.
And as you report, our country lost 20,360 children and teens in 2016. Could you rank the leading causes of death for us, 1, 2, and 3?
Sure, absolutely. So the leading cause of death is motor vehicle crash, and that has been really stable in our country for many decades. Stable but declining. A lot less children and teens die now from motor vehicle crash than they have over the past 30 years, but that remains the number one cause. The number three cause is also really not that surprising to a lot of people and is cancer. Those rates have also really been declining over the past couple of decades due to mountains of funding for good cancer research and prevention. And the number two cause of death among children is firearms. This also has been very stable over the past several decades, with the being the number two cause of death for well over the 17-year time period that we talk about here.
And so is it fair to say that looking at the data report, that firearm deaths are the only leading cause of death that we have not made serious moves to reduce?
Correct. We have made virtually no progress in the last 17 years, and in fact, we're seeing an increase over the last 3 years. We see an increase of 32% up in gun homicide among children and teens, a 26% increase in suicide among children and teens. We've made no change and are really getting quite a bit worse. And in fact, we find our paper didn't cover, but we discuss more recently, in 2017, the data came out, and we find that trend is indeed increasing during that time. And in fact, we now see in 2017, if you are between the ages of 12 and 17 years old, this is your leading cause of death.
And something that really jumped out at me as I looked at your report, that you find the rate of child and teen deaths from firearms in our country is more than 36 times as high as the average rate across 12 other high-income countries. What did you feel as you crunched this data? I mean, you're in emergency rooms. You're seeing the results of this. How did this make you feel?
It's a great question. How we feel about looking at this data and talking about this data publicly, I think, really is about sharing people what it's like to be in emergency departments every day across the country. And as an emergency physician, I very much, and my other colleagues that are emergency physicians and trauma physicians, have felt this feeling every day. This is not a new feeling for us, that children have been dying by gun violence in our country. In addition to the over 3,000 children that die, over 12,000 children and teens are shot. And those children, if you add up 12,000, over 12,000, that's a lot of emergency departments every day that have full staff caring for children and teens that are shot. So those numbers feel very what we see every day, all day long. And I think this is a chance for us to show those data really clearly to the country that I think is not as aware.
Last November, the NRA tweeted out, and I'm going to quote this tweet, "Someone should tell self-important anti-gun doctors to stay in their lane. Half of the articles in Annals of Internal Medicine are pushing for gun control. Most upsetting, however, the medical community seems to have consulted no one but themselves." That tweet led to the hashtag, #ThisIsOurLane. Trauma surgeons, ER docs like you, pediatricians and other physicians sharing photos, sharing thoughts, and saying, hold on, we do have a central role in this conversation about firearm-related injury and death. Tell us more about what kinds of things you see in your emergency room that drives this work for you.
Sure. And again, this is very real for us in daily life in emergency rooms all over the country. In more suburban emergency departments, like an Ann Arbor emergency department, we see youth and teens coming in after failed suicide attempts by firearms. And those are horrific wounds to heads and necks. And talking to parents about that very preventable injury is absolutely brutal. And then in the more urban places in Michigan and across the country, we see in emergency departments all the time all kinds of daily violence from kids who are walking home from school, from kids that a gun accidentally went off, and I hate the word accident, but inadvertently went off, and are sitting with parents, giving them very bad news all the time. And those pictures tweeted out by physicians across the country, I think, were really just an outpouring of anger at the inability to talk about this for so many years publicly because firearms have been such a third rail, and this pent-up frustration of daily talking to families and parents after having bloody scrubs and very gory images of children dying and not really being able to talk about that so much publicly as a public health issue. And now we're moving beyond that to being able to really express that this is indeed something that we're taking care of every day. And why are we taking care of this every day? And what can we do to not take care of this? And then the last part about the This Is My Lane piece is that physicians have always thought of themselves as supposed to be helping our families and kids stay safer. We talk to them about hot water in their bathtub. We talk to them about car safety seats. We talk to them about vaccines. We talk to them about all sorts of things. And why would we not talk to them about the thing that is either the leading cause of death among minority teens or the second leading cause of death among all the kids in our country? Why are we not talking about this? And this is indeed our lane.
And I should just tack on, you mentioned suburban and urban. What are we seeing in rural areas?
Yeah, so rural is really very similar. One of the things we found in the article that we published that I think surprised a lot of people is firearm injuries and death aren't limited to any one person's backyard. This is really something we're seeing across all of our neighborhoods and communities. And actually, the rates of firearm death are very similar across rural, suburban, and urban settings. In more rural and suburban settings, we're more likely to see children and teens die by suicide. In more urban settings, we're more likely to see it by homicide. But nonetheless, those are all children and teens that are dying by guns across those areas that are preventable injuries.
I'm speaking with Dr. Rebecca Cunningham, who's a professor of emergency medicine and also the director of the U of M Injury Prevention Study. She and her team have released a study looking at how children and teens die in this country, and number two, firearm deaths, and that has not changed at all. No progress being made. Now, late last week, we learned the House is going to hold the first hearing on gun violence prevention in 8 years, coming this Wednesday, the House Judiciary Committee. What do you hope might come out of this?
So the first thing is that we need to get people talking about this again and having this not be a subject that can't be discussed for any reason. There's no reason we should have something that is killing this many children and teens be something that is not allowed to be discussed in public, polite society. We have to be talking about this a lot and thinking about talking about it the same way that we talk about car crash and cancer and what we can be doing to keep kids safer. There's a couple things that I hope come out of it. One is we need a lot more attention to what works. And the way that we find out what works for injury prevention is we do research on that. There's been almost no research on this topic at all for the past 20 years. So we spent about $1 billion on motor vehicle crash prevention strategies in the past 10 years. We spent about, well over 3,000 grants the federal government funded during that time. We spent about $1 billion on cancer research among children, well over 3,000 grants funded to smart scientists all over the country that are working tirelessly to figure out how to decrease death rates among those two causes of death. And with that, we saw tremendous decreases in death. We spent about $3 million and about 10 grants during that same time period total. And with that, not surprisingly, we saw a flat rate with no change or improvement in the death rates and, in fact, an uptick. So one of the biggest things I think that needs to come out of this is we really need to have an increased attention and allocation for funding. And why are we not funding this cause of death at the same rate that we've funded the other leading causes of death? And there's ways to do that without changing the rights of our citizens and without getting anywhere near Second Amendment rights. Solid injury prevention science can work on this the same way we have more cars on the road than in 1970. We have more miles driven than in 1970. We have about half as many deaths by children and teens as in 1970.
Well, we do know before the House Judiciary Committee is the Background Checks Act of 2019, H.R. 8. It is bipartisan. It has, by the way, GOP Congressman Fred Upton of West Michigan as an original co-sponsor, and it would mandate background checks for nearly all firearm sales, commercial and private. And it has 225 co-sponsors now and wide support among Michigan's congressional delegation. Is this the kind of thing that doctors like you are saying that's what we need to see happen in Washington?
So, yes, we need to have these conversations. We need to be having a lot more active conversations about what works and bringing options to the table for bipartisan support. We need to do a lot to understand policies such as background checks and which laws work and which laws don't work. And in order to do that, we have to have some start to move through.
What do you want parents to take away from this study you've done?
Sure. Parents need to understand that we spent a lot of time. I'm the parent of several teenagers. I spend a lot of time worrying about how my kids are driving across town. Spend a lot of time taking them to driver's ed, sorting out, getting their car registered. And those are all really important things to do that we do to keep our kids safe. The firearms are as likely or more likely to kill them during that same age and developmental period. We need to start asking a lot more questions about firearms in our home, firearms in our grandparents' home, firearms in our aunts and uncles' homes. How are they stored? Are they stored safely?
Friends' homes when kids are visiting?
Friends' homes when their kids need. Are they locked up? Are they stored safely? Do you know exactly where they are? Simply teaching kids to not touch them. Education is important but not sufficient for curious toddlers. There was an unfortunate, just today in the news, a four-year-old shot his pregnant mother by mistake in a loaded gun that was under her mattress. Why does he have access to that loaded gun? What can we do to keep our children so that our curious, intelligent children away from getting a handle on a loaded gun?
Dr. Rebecca Cunningham, Professor of Emergency Medicine, Director of the U of M Injury Prevention Center, and she also directs the Firearm Safety Among Children and Teens Consortium, the FACTS Consortium, funded by the NIH. We want to thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much.